In the case of U.S. versus Zahar Tsarnaev, the U.S. government wants to prove that Tsarnaev is a radical jihadi, and that's why he planted a bomb near the finish line of the Boston Marathon in April 2013. Today, in day 10 of the federal death penalty trial against Tsarnaev, his computer and the digital records he left behind were presented as evidence of his radicalization. From the Moakley Federal Courthouse in Boston, this is Finish Line, inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial. I'm David Boeri from WBUR.
And I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
Yesterday, it seemed, the trial was dominated by men and women in latex gloves handling physical evidence. Today, we have evidence of a different sort entering the courtroom. We have investigators who uncovered the laptop computer, the desktops, iPods, CDs, thumb drives, cell phones, all connected to Zahar. There's a sea of files and documents associated with all that. That has to be strained. We don't get to that today, but in order to show that what investigators, FBI investigators, have already listened to and checked out, this investigator, this expert, had to show that what they had listened to actually came from the electronic devices.
Yeah, this was the beginning, David, of laying the government's attempt to lay down motive. This is the beginning of the end of the prosecution case. And what we saw today, it struck me almost as a generational difference in front of us. You know, in the last generation, we had series of gangsters talking themselves into jail cells over telephones. In this case, if you remember, Stefan Silva, his friend said they were very cautious, these two, him and Zahar Tsarnaev, about what they said on the telephone. The difference is they're young people, and they put everything on their devices, whether it's an iPod, whether it's their iPhone, whether it's their laptop, whether it's their desktop. And what we saw today is that the government has gone out and used all these devices and mined them for the evidence that they claim will show that Zahar Tsarnaev was a radicalized jihadi.
Well, we've already said this is probably the most modern trial in the history of the federal court here in Boston. And they're using that. And you're right, it's a generational gap to be sure, and I'm an example of it. But again, we don't hear the substance today. We don't hear the substance of those documents and the files. That will come. But in order to demonstrate that it actually came from all those files, those devices, we bring in somebody who is an expert in computer forensics. And, you know, they call economics the gray science. I felt like I was being digitally waterboarded today listening to this.
How do you think that jury felt listening to that stuff?
I was watching.
3.5 hours of it.
I mean, that was really unnecessarily long. It was poorly done. It was a case of the prosecution poorly presenting its case there. And you always have to worry about the jurors and the reaction of the jurors.
Yeah.
I was watching them. Surprisingly, only one of them was leaning over somewhat. They were watching because I think they were hooked. And what kept us paying attention was what we might see were in those files. But we just got a glimpse of them. The fact that Zahar apparently has a lifetime subscription to Inspire magazine. That's the Al-Qaeda magazine. It's issued by the Al-Qaeda organization in the Arabian Peninsula, and connected in Yemen, thought to be connected to some of the most active terrorism of all. In that Inspire magazine, there is one particular article that was in his files, Make a Bomb in the Kitchen of Your Mom, written by the AQ Al-Qaeda chef.
Hey, talk about the generational differences. I have the complete U2 on my iPod. Zahar Tsarnaev has the complete Inspire.
He has all the lectures, apparently, of Anwar al-Awlaki. And he, of course, is the radical cleric, a U.S. citizen, thought to have inspired some of the worst terrorist incidents, targeted by a U.S. drone and killed in 2011. His speeches, his sermons are out there. And supposedly, after he began talking to federal investigators, after his capture, Zahar Tsarnaev was said to have pointed to him as a spiritual influence, as somebody that shaped his last year.
The government's going to make a big deal of that. What struck me, David, when I saw the files that came up is across his devices was the Join the Caravan, which is the famous speech, lecture, sermon, whatever you want to call it, of Abdullah Yusuf Assam, who's widely credited as the father of global jihad. He is the one that first articulated the responsibility that Muslims have to carry out jihad when other Muslims are oppressed. So there's a historical context running through this records, too. It's not just the Johnny-come-latelys of the jihadists that are operating in Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, I believe that Assam was killed in 1989, so this goes back a while.
But let's be clear. There are no federal crimes against reading Inspire, listening to those lectures, listening to music that is associated with jihadists. None of that is against the laws of the United States. So what's the purpose of introducing that here?
Well, clearly they are going to put up an expert witness, probably as early as Monday, certainly sometime next week, because we are pretty well sure that the prosecution will be finished sometime next week. And that expert will be expected to testify and put these things in context. What do these things mean? We have a general idea what they mean, but the government's going to put their particular spin on this, and they're going to say, your average kid is not downloading stuff like this. Your average kid is not downloading the complete collection of Inspire magazine. Today, all we saw were just titles, things that we know were on his computers, and more interestingly, things that were across all his devices. He didn't have it on one device. He had it on all his devices.
Suggesting that what he's listening to and what he's copied to all devices is very important to him.
Absolutely.
And the reason they're introducing all these articles, all the essays, all that, is not to charge him with crimes, but to establish his motive. Because the one thing the defense is relying on, their whole case is just hinged on getting one juror to believe that, in fact, he's not a jihadist. He didn't become a jihadist, that he's somebody who is a psychological hostage of his brother, following his brother. And so I think the government's going to go really hard in introducing all this stuff on the computer.
And obviously the defense, when they get their crack, are going to say, how do you know he downloaded this stuff? Were you there? In fact, the FBI supervisory agent, Kevin Swindon, who testified today about this stuff, basically made an acknowledgement on the stand. Unless you're standing over somebody's shoulder, you don't know who's on that computer.
And there is stuff that's on there that suggests that other people were using that computer. In fact, the expert said it would appear that many people had been on that computer.
Well, it's a computer that was among a bunch of college kids. And as the testimony showed today, Yahaz and I have had more than one device. He kept things on several devices, and all these devices were shared. So I think the government has a very difficult burden of proof to saying Yahaz and I have downloaded this particular thing. It's going to be hard to prove.
Now, what's interesting, though, if the government is going to motivation, I wonder how much the defense can get into, no, that's not the motivation. The motivation was something else in a cross-examination. This is what we continue to talk about, the mitigating factors, blaming it on Tamerlan.
Well, I mean, you will find people in the Islamic world who have completely different views about what Awaki was talking about, particularly in that series, The Hereafter. Some people say this was a guide for people, particularly jihadis, who wanted to go out and die, if necessary, in jihad. Others I've heard argue that, no, he was talking about all Muslims. This was not aimed just at jihadis. It was aimed at a much wider audience. I'm sure the defense is going to get into that.
Interesting. And by the way, also on one of those devices was Jahar Tsarnaev's resume. You probably noticed, I couldn't help but notice this self-description. Responsible, hard worker, great swimmer, social, nice, can enforce rules, very enthusiastic, reliable, people person, certified lifeguard, first aid, CPR.
What's not to like?
Boy, if he came as advertised,
absolutely,
that's quite a kit. And we might be hearing that from the defense. And that brings us to the end of day 10 and the end of the week in the federal death penalty trial of Jahar Tsarnaev. You've been listening to Finish Line, Inside the Boston Marathon Bombing Trial. From the Moakley Federal Courthouse in Boston, I'm David Boeri from WBUR.
And I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
Join us again next week, each day after court, Monday through Thursday.
Finish Line, Inside the Boston Marathon Bombing Trial, is a co-production of WBUR and the Boston Globe. New episodes of the podcast will be released multiple times a week throughout the trial after court lets out for the day. You can listen at WBUR.org and at bostonglobe.com, or you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, where new episodes will appear as soon as they're released. Go to the podcast section of iTunes and search Finish Line to subscribe. Thanks for listening.